You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
Hi, this is Andrew Shearer, arts and entertainment writer for OnlineAthens.com and the Athens Banner Herald. Thanks for listening to the podcast. One of my favorite interviews I did last year was with an improv comedian named Mark Kendall from Dad's Garage Theater in Atlanta. He was doing a show here in Athens at the Moonlight Theater called The Magic Negro and Other Blackness. And I consider Mark to be a genius of the highest order, and I love talking to him. And so I heard from him again because he is now making videos, and just hearing about the transition he made from improv sketch writing to stand-up comedy, and then how he has then moved all of this and shaped it into video content that is quite honestly amazing and is definitely ready for TV and for someone to pick this up and give him a show. It's a great story, and more so, I also engaged him about because race is the subject that he addresses in his work. I talked to him about how he does that, what his approach is, and some of the answers are just really, really great. I think you'll get a lot out of it, but also just everything he says. It's almost like getting its own kind of class right here in this podcast. So thank you, Mark, for talking to me, and thank you for listening. Hope you enjoy. First, let me tell you, Mark, how happy I was to get that message from you. You were like, You were like one of the favorite people that I ever talked to. I guess what you do is just more like what I personally, the kind of entertainment that I personally like.
Oh, thank you.
And so that was just like, you know, I remember it was called Magic Negro, but I was like, you know, this whole thing is just magical to me that it even exists. And so many people told me they loved listening to you and loved that story. And, you know, it was one of my favorite interviews to do, and honestly, one of my most well-received as well, which tells me I got a right-on audience, I guess. And I mentioned you to somebody I was talking to, an Atlanta comedian named Mia Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. She said she knew you because she was just talking. With her, it was more of just like, what is a stand-up comic doing right now? And that was, you know, kind of what I wanted to talk to her about, because she was doing these virtual stand-ups. So I'm going, and who will be laughing during, you know, I couldn't imagine it, right? So she kind of walked me through how she does those. And we ended up talking a long time. I got along with her really good, or really well, excuse me. And then, I happened to mention your show, and she was like, oh, yeah, I know him.
Cool. So,
your first and last name,
Mia's great. I hope back when live shows were a thing, I would host variety shows sometimes with my improv group, Dark Side of the Room, and we would have her as a guest sometimes. And you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say, like, some of the funniest stand-up sets that I've seen live have been Mia's stuff.
Yeah.
Her material is just so good. I'm really excited for what she's been doing more recently, like with TV and stuff. And so I'm really excited for her, and I hope that continues in a big way.
Yeah, not to sidetrack on her, but I was just amazed at watching her different stuff, how she really can play to any type of audience. Mm-hmm. Because one of the crowds she was in front of was like mostly all white people, and she was doing a variation of the material that I'd seen her do just with a general or mixed audience. And I was like, man, I saw the little changes that she made, but it wasn't anything dramatic. It was more of just like read the room and make them laugh, but she didn't compromise any of her edge, I thought.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just, you know, less, mature language. But other than that, that was it.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing since I talked to you? Because that was like late last year when you did the Moonlight here in Athens. Tell me about like what you're doing then and how things have sort of changed for you before we get into those videos.
Of course. Yeah. So we spoke late last year. And since that time, I've continued to do like a lot more stand-up. Back when we were doing shows, stand-up was taking up more of my time than improv was. And then, you know, pretty soon after I did my shows at Moonlight, my friend John Mangan and I put on this live show called Magic and Bird, where he played Larry Bird and I played Magic Johnson. And it was like this blend of like video sketches, a fake documentary, and then like a live play that was all like one thing. And basically the premise was Magic and Bird started as rivals, like hating each other, but then we were forced to come together and join forces to solve a mystery while we were overseas at the 1992 Barcelona Olympics on a drink. And it was just the silliest thing because John Mangan is one of my favorite comedians to perform with in Atlanta. And we get together. The thing that we love to do is just like the silliest, silliest thing possible. Neither of us look anything like Magic Johnson or Larry Bird. Neither of us sound anything like Magic Johnson or Larry Bird. And then like the plot was just so ridiculous. And so that was a lot of fun. And so we ran that show in November. And a really cool part of that was for the videos that we did, we worked with Bill Worley, who's a comedian, improviser, and filmmaker here in Atlanta. And my experience in doing videos with him, we started getting together and it's just like, oh, in 2020, we want to start doing more video stuff. We want to be like deliberate about taking all this stuff that we've been doing live for years, but then like put it out to video because the video element of Magic and Bird was really gratifying and it just added this other element that I hadn't been doing as much of, you know? So at the start of 2020, Bill and I kind of like started to meet more regularly to plan out different shoots. And so I think it was maybe March 1st, I want to say, we shot the MARTA video, which I sent you. And then like weeks later, the pandemic started and we were just kind of sitting on it for months. Cause we were just like, well, people aren't really riding trains right now. It doesn't really make sense. You know what I mean? And then, and then June rolled around and we're just like, let's just put it out. Or actually, no, it was because, I did a screening on Daz Garage Twitch channel of an old performance of Magic Negro that I had, when I took it to Canada in 2016. And so we were like, oh, well, I can play that MARTA because I didn't do the MARTA piece in Canada because Canada does not have MARTA. I can add the MARTA video at the start of that just to give people another thing to enjoy as they're watching the live stream of the show. And so then we decided to release the video on its own earlier before the live stream of the Magic Negro. And so we did, we've since released another video and we're wrapping up a third one right now. And so I guess just to kind of catch you up, it was like, or just to like summarize that, I guess, like since late October, I did Magic and Bird with my friend John Mangan and Bill Worley. And then since then, even before, you know, things locked down the way that they did, I've just been trying to, in addition to doing live stuff, trying to, you know, focus on getting more video content out there.
Well, I got to tell you, man, those videos, I'm like, why is Mark contacting me, man? This is stuff Comedy Central should be paying him to do. I mean, it looks like just as good as the stuff I ever saw on there. And it's, I cried laughing so hard. I mean, I, again, it is my kind of stuff, but it's still, I was just like, what does he want with me? You know, this man has, you know, they got to be calling him after seeing this, you know? It was amazing to me.
Thank you.
Being from, I guess with the MARTA video, that, well, I could take that apart like cinematically as a video editor and tell you how those beats just work so well, like the instincts of who to cut to and what the background actors are. Were you the director of those or what did you?
No, so for those cuts, I got to give all credit to Bill Worley. So he directed it and shot it and then he edited it. And then we had a bunch of Boston people helping us out. So Jenny Wentling did the art direction. Mm-hmm. So like the whiteboard that you see with all those details, that's all her. Johnny Stubbs did lighting for it. So to kind of like make it look like this, you know, weird basement kind of thing that we were in that was shot in Bill's basement. And yeah, but the reason that I've made videos with Bill is he has, he's like this triple threat as a filmmaker in the sense that he can direct, shoot, and edit, and he can make things look really good. But the thing that I feel like, I mean, a lot of things really, really well, but the thing that I sets him apart, like as a comedic collaborator, is that he understands how to take the timing of a live performance and have it translate to video. So there are a lot of laughs that could have been lost, but because he knows how to edit so well, he gets it. And I think part of that is because he also is a very accomplished improviser. He's done improv for years and he has that sense of timing. I've done videos with other people, and not to say anything negative about them at all.
Sure, yeah.
But a lot of times it's rare for me that I've worked with editors where they get you laughs that maybe originally were not there.
Yeah.
But he can make laughs out of nothing. And so I can't say enough good things about him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because on stage, something like that performed, you just aren't going to necessarily be looking, you know, at what someone else is doing. And that was one of the things that made me laugh so hard at that thing, was because he'll cut to the funny thing, and that, you know, that all editing is just to sort of direct you to the joke and stuff, but that you got to have comic timing. Like, you got to understand all that. So that was, I think, my favorite part, other than the fact that Doraville Station is mentioned, because I'm from Doraville. And I remember when that place was being built, and Doraville Station was ended up being my key to everything. Kept me out of a lot of trouble, because, you know, we would get on there and we would have access to, you know, places that we maybe couldn't get a ride to.
Right.
How it is out in Atlanta, it's like anything that's outside the perimeter is just like, that must be 100 miles away, right?
Yeah, it's wild. It's
wild. My first ride out here to Athens, I was like, we're going nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, everything disappeared. It's all trees. Yeah. Like, I'd never, you know, other than like a family trip. So anyway, people, I would say, yeah, all of my friends from where I grew up there, that's the thing they could laugh at absolutely any time. I mean, we all, everybody there grew up knowing MARTA, and specifically the reasons why it didn't expand to areas. Could you explain the video for those who've not seen it yet? I'm going to attach everything, but I wanted to know if you might go over just a little bit the concept, because you are the writer, I assume, on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So for the MARTA video, the premise is, it's like, what if MARTA, Atlanta's public transportation system, expanded to the suburb of Cobb County? And so what you see is a group of black guys that are saying, like, wow, now that MARTA actually does go straight to Cobb County, we can finally rob all the people that live there. Because beforehand, like, without a train, that's the only way we can steal stuff. And so then they go through like a step-by-step process of what would actually be involved in getting from point A to point B. And it's like, it's a train ride, it's a bus ride, then it's a long walk. And then once you're inside, you take a piano or something like that, and then you have to go all the way back without anyone like noticing you or suspecting you. And it's, the idea is that, you know, that's a real argument that gets used a lot of times.
Yes.
When public, not just in Georgia, but like all over the country, when discussions about expanding public transportation are brought up, people are like, oh, it's going to bring crime, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And they use that as a deterrent. But when you think about what that actually means or what that would actually look like, it's ridiculous. So that's kind of like the premise behind it. And so my character is kind of like the main character explaining things, but the people that I'm talking to are also reacting to it, you know, and they're down for some of it, but then sometimes they give me like these double takes and things like that. And that lets the audience know, like, this is a joke, you know? So yeah, that's what the sketch is.
I don't know if you could see, but man, I'm tearing up just you describing it. I mean, it was so good. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, you don't even necessarily need to be familiar with MARTA, I think, to realize what they're talking about, to understand that. It's just going to resonate with the right people. But also, man, what I love about your work is that you take things that are very, very serious, you know, and especially when we get to this other video that you sent me. But, like, you can take that stuff and you can – you're not necessarily like just making fun of it or satirizing it or parroting or sending up or lampooning, whatever you want to call it, but it is a way to address something and make it funny, but it's also not downplaying the realities of it either. I mean, that is just, and that's what you do with Magic Negro as well, because, you know, that's a thing that could, that subject that could easily be like an academic paper, but you've turned it into something, very funny, very accessible. It's one of those stealth things where people are getting turned on to some issue by way of a very, like, I would say it's a not a very intimidating kind of way to deliver that, because especially now, people just, I've been gravitating toward comedy even more than I did before, you know, and that's a real thing. And so, yeah, I don't know if there's a question there, but that is just the gift I think you've got as a writer and performer, just being able to get in there. Not everybody can do that, you know, and especially with sensitive subjects, can easily go the wrong way, or, you know, people could say you're making light of it. So do you have any, like, sort of like a careful approach or a thoughtful approach, anything you kind of consider, when you get into writing something like that?
Yeah, I think there is definitely like a thoughtfulness that goes with it. I think, you know, what I've noticed is that audiences, for the most part, will let you kind of go anywhere if they can see that what you're talking about is true to you in some way.
Okay.
You know, so I'm pretty careful in terms of like how I choose to present certain topics, you know? So it's just like, when you see me on stage, you see who I am and what I look like, you see that I'm a Black man. And so you could perhaps infer like why I would care about, you know, public transportation not spreading to other parts of Georgia when I live in Atlanta and I live in Georgia, you know?
Yeah.
Or like when I talk about the N-word, you can maybe infer how it's just like why I would care and why I would have like a personal investment in how like that word is used or not used, you know? And so I feel like if you're coming from a place of, if there's like a certain sincerity that's there, people will tend to go along with you. That being said, though, you know, the great thing about live performance is that you can adjust and change. So I'm never, or I should say usually for the most part, I'm trying not to do these things because they're shocking, you know. It's more so these are things that are on my mind and I want to explore them. And I'm trying my best to be funny. And so, and I think the audience can kind of sense that as well. It's like, are you saying something just because you're trying to surprise me, or are you saying something because this is on your mind and this is something that you want to explore?
Yeah.
And I think there can be sort of like a difference. And I think once you've like communicated that to the audience, then you can kind of see like what works and what doesn't work. So there are sketches in the Magic Negro that have changed as I've done it live. Also, there were elements that changed taking things from the live version to the video version, where things changed, like, I would say fairly significantly, either updated or better reflect like how I felt right now in the moment. And then I also try to listen to audiences and hear the type of laughs that you're getting. So I think that there are laughs where people are like, laughing because something is interesting or you're showing them something new. But if you're getting kind of like a groan laugh, maybe that tells you something needs to be adjusted.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that you change it 100% of the time, but maybe that does at least inform how you choose to continue to perform the material. And maybe that does inform like the new stuff that you continue to put out there. But I also think that, you know, comedy is an interesting thing in that the context is always changing, you know? And so you also kind of have to be willing to take certain risks, knowing that, like, okay, you might have the best of intentions and then you put something out there and it misses the mark. And that's just also, I think, just part of it. But I think that, fortunately, like, I mean, back when live performance was a thing, you'd have audiences to go to kind of like see like what kind of laughs are you getting. And then now that we've been more in isolation, it's been me sending scripts or cuts of videos to people being like, do I have any blind spots here? Am I missing something?
Yeah.
And that's not always like a cure all, but, no. but I mean, that is just kind of like how I choose to go about it.
So. Yeah. I'm fascinated by that, Van, and I'm sorry if I'm taking too long, but I like the nuts and bolts of this stuff because, you know, when you're talking about the way you're talking about, that bit of it sounds a lot like when I talk to comics about how they build their hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, or whatever their current like set is, you know, they often, you know, it's that process of hearing the reactions and all of that. And then, you know, back when I talked to Mia Jackson, she was, you know, my first question was, how do you know what's working? How are you able to do the things you do, with, you know, with these audiences like that? And she explained to me how it's the other comics' laughs that you hear. And I think that was, you know, that's a great way to do it. But with the green eggs, it's called Green Eggs and the N Word. Is that the name?
Yeah. Of it? Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of like the caption that we gave it online. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to tell you, like that was like a whole other, it wasn't like super different from your humor and what I think it is, the, you know, your method of operation. I don't know what's the right word there, but the things you're concerned about, it fits really well. But there was I know you've had to have heard this from other people. It escalates so much, right? And it builds to this point where I was just like, you know, the most recent Chappelle set that he did after George Floyd.
Yeah.
Where he's like, he at one point he goes, wow, this isn't funny at all. and I'm like, oh, you know, that's the thing. You know, it's just like, how could you make that material funny right now when, you know, there is so much emotion and so much anger and so much hurt and violence and all of that, you know? And I was like, I see where he's going with this, and I'm laughing along with it. Like, it's because it's the name alone. I'm a big, from way back, a fan of Richard Pryor. And so, you know, he's got definite like bits where he is going there with that kind of stuff, you know, the mild mannered janitor for the Daily Planet or whatever, and he goes into the closet. So, you know, he was always really kind of hitting those nerves intentionally, but he knew when to pull back and when to, I mean, it was obviously he was a master of what he was doing, but it was like, it was to me a bit like something out of Chappelle's show, but also the way those, I wanted you to take it apart for me, but also address those clips at the end and whose idea that was and how they were chosen, because that really delivers, I think it caps off the urgent message of it and shows that you are, like you said, you are being careful with it and you are being thoughtful, and that shows, I just think the crescendo is so great. The dynamics of it are so great. That was just an amazing bit to me because I was surprised by it, but not shocked by it, which is, you know, I know you've said that that's a goal. But I that was the one I watched more than, see, I watched Marta twice, but that one, yeah, I think I did three or four times and then I sent it to someone else to see what they thought of it. So if you don't mind, if we're not running too long, if you wouldn't mind, like kind of taking that one apart for me.
Sure, for sure. So Green Eggs and Ham, or like Green Eggs and the N-Word, that's a piece that I've done live for a long time. And it was actually kind of like the first sketch that I had like completed back when I was first developing the Magic Negro Show. So that was kind of like the first piece that I had that I was like, okay, I think this is like what the tone for this solo show is going to be. So I've had this piece for a while, but when I wanted to make it into a video, I change certain aspects of it to be more specific to some of the conversations that are being had right now in regards to race, and to, I think, make it more clear and explicit about who the LeVar Burton character is talking to.
Yeah.
Because I think, because I wanted to remove as much ambiguity as I could from the sketch. In the live version, there are a couple different ways that it can be interpreted. And because I'm in the room with you, it's a different experience. Whereas, like, if someone's just kind of watching a video and it's not in the context of like a larger hour-long piece, you know, there were some adjustments that I wanted to make so that if you just watch this piece and watch this one piece alone, hopefully you wouldn't be as confused about like what I was trying to say or where I stood.
Yeah.
So, so with this piece, basically it's like, it's taking the Dr. Seuss book, Green Eggs and Ham, where you have this character of Sam I Am talking to this grumpy person, asking them to try this dish. And in all these different situations, this person says, oh, I wouldn't try it there, or anywhere. And then the end, he tries the green eggs and ham. It turns out he loves it. And so with this sketch, you have the same character of Sam I Am asking this white person, would you say the N-word? And the white person is like, well, because I would never say the N-word, that kind of also, I'm not a racist, so I would never say it. I'm bringing up all these examples of times that people might say the N-word or examples of people maybe not saying the N-word, but where they are embracing like forms of systemic racism. So like an example of that might be in the video, the grumpy character says like, I can't be racist. I live in Atlanta. And I cut to a shot of me at the intersection of Ponce and Monroe. And that intersection in Atlanta is significant because it kind of divided like white and black neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And that street, Ponce, was used as a way to segregate people. And, you know, when you come to Atlanta, Atlanta has this reputation of being the city too busy to hate. And sometimes I think that's seen as an excuse by people to say like, oh, like we don't have any racist baggage to deal with because, you know, because look at all these other examples of these things that we did so great. So that's like one example of some of the clips that are put intentionally throughout the video. At the end of the video, the point that I kind of am trying to make is that we give a lot of power to words like the N-word or like labeling whether or not someone is a racist. And sometimes I think that perhaps distracts from the larger conversation of ways that systemic racism keeps chugging along as we like have these like little arguments. And so the purpose of the run of clips that I use at the end, some of them I picked and then a couple of them Bill found. And basically there are clips of white people in positions of power, whether it's politicians or someone like the Cooper lady, you know, where they may not be saying the N-word, but they are showing their power over blackness in different ways. And the damage, you could argue, is the same. And so I think kind of what I'm saying at the end is it's like, yeah, I mean, like the N-word is a complicated word that I think deserves, you know, I mean, that's sure. If you want to talk about that, you can. And I think that can be productive. But also, I mean, even if you were to take that word away, a lot of the same problems still exist. And so that was the idea behind that. And that's something that is different from the live version. And so that's kind of like an example of a way that I wanted to adjust it just to like make it more clear. Because if you saw Green Eggs and Ham in the context of the full show, you might be able to infer that that's something that I meant. But with just having 4 minutes, I was trying to add that in there just so you're just like, okay, I don't have an hour with you. I have 4 minutes. So let me put this in there to make it more clear.
Yeah. No, it could not have been more clear. And I loved that addition to that because I guess it reminded me of what Spike Lee did, most recently in The Five Bloods where – and I hope I'm not spoiling anything, but it's the end of it is going like, here is real world examples of what I'm talking about that you are familiar with, like that happened 2 days ago. I mean, and it's a Vietnam War story, but here he brings it right back around, and he gets so great with all. And that's honestly what I thought of at that through those moments, because I was like, in 4 minutes, Mark has taken us everywhere. You know, I mean, that was a real, you know, you reminded me it was 4 minutes, like, man, all that gets jammed into there, but it still flows so well. I'm excited by, and you said there's a third that you're working on. Yeah. I don't want you to give away, but what can you tell me about, I guess this could be the wrap up of, what can you tell me about that and what you're going to keep doing? And then also I want to make sure all the websites and sources that people can get at you, I want to make sure we give those.
Oh, of course. Yeah. So the third one, that we've shot and we're just kind of wrapping up is like a fake commercial. And it's a person that's kind of selling a solution for how to deal with the Confederate monuments that are up. Mm-hmm. But he has sort of like a, an unorthodox way of dealing with it. So it's kind of like the format that we're playing with are like those, wild late night infomercials. And the topic at hand is Confederate monuments.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So what about the ways that people can, get a hold of you or to find more of your stuff or keep track of what you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. So you can follow me at Mark Kendall Comedy on Instagram. I also have a YouTube channel where the videos that I put out live. So if YouTube's your preferred method, my channel is just called Mark Kendall. You can find me there. I also have a comedian page on Facebook. So if you search like Mark Kendall ATL or Mark Kendall, I'll pop up. I'm wearing this shirt in my Facebook profile picture. So I'm on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and all the videos that I put out are on all three of those platforms.
Okay, cool. And yeah, like I said, I really enjoy what you're doing, and I was actually flattered that you contacted me to talk to you to get caught up, because I was like, yeah, this guy, you know, this is probably the last time I'm going to, because the next one is just going to be all, you know, okay player and, you know, Deadline Hollywood and everybody else talking about, you know, the deals that you're making, because this deserves to be seen by everyone, because I know everyone is going to enjoy it. And I think they're going to benefit from it too.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, hopefully this isn't it, but you know, if it is, I predicted it. I predicted it.